Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable for this very, very snowy Thursday morning. It is the 17th of December. It is 12 minutes past 9 o'clock. And weirdly, I'm doing the show from my house, which I have never, ever done before. I've never had to do it before. And I certainly don't want to question our fantastic meteorology and news departments. But I heard David Gustina earlier say that we have a foot of snow in Washington County. No.
Wrong.
We have a lot more than that. When you open up the garage door, about a third of it is snow. And I understand that that is sort of windblown too, but no, there's a lot of snow. But good morning. I just want to thank just a couple of thank yous before we start, because Rob Chacon, Mike Bowen, Stacy Rosenberry, and Alan Chartok all made sure that this could happen, and it did. And we've been working on this for the past 24 hours, and it's just been, you know, let's not congratulate ourselves until we make sure that it works. But I hear everyone in my ears, and I have more voices in my head than I usually do, so that's good. So good morning, everybody. It is a snowy morning, but we're going to go through with the show. I will say it's beautiful, and I will also say that I've never done the show this close to my liquor cabinet, so we'll see how that goes. Alan, good morning. How are you? I know you do this with a little more regularity than I do, but it is it's a little weird when you're used to being in the studio and you're not. But how are you? What's the great Barrington report?
Well, the same as yours. No question. Can you hear me, first of all? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I sure can. Yeah,
great,
I can hear
great,
you.
Great. Okay. Absolutely. You know, we did the media project earlier, and it was fine. But it's amazing, isn't it, Joe? I mean, amazing that you're in Greenwich. I'm down here in Great Barrington, and the people are in the newsroom, and radio has really developed to a point where you really can do it from your home. What I'm worried about is that we won't see you again.
No, I'm too much. I think I'm too much of a control freak. I like being with Mike Bowen too much. Having him on the other side of the glass.
Big Mike. That's right.
He's my security blanket. It's very weird doing this show without seeing his face. So
I got it.
I can't do that.
Now, as for me, I have to tell you, I tried to, you know, my deal is that Murray, I'm up since 4, but Murray comes down to see me. He says, take me out. I opened the door and there was no way. So I had to pick him up and carry him to the street. And it was almost over his head in the street because they hadn't plowed. Or I don't think they had plowed.
And no, had, I don't. I haven't seen a plow yet, and it's really weird. You know, you were talking about technology and years. And when I first started in commercial radio, we used to do what we called remote broadcast. And we would go to the local car dealership and do their grand opening and talk. And I always liked to do those because they'd give you an extra $50. And but, oh, my God, the equipment that took to get that, and we had antennas and these things that took like 3 people to lift, and I have this little tiny box in front of me right now that is just magically making our voice go throughout 7 states. It's fairly a miracle, but
it's called a tie line, right, Joe?
That's right. It is a tie line, and it's really very cool, and I'm more than a little impressed. So let me introduce everybody to you, because we're not the only ones who are home and doing the show from the comfort of wherever we are. I don't know where I don't know where Ira is. I assume Ira Fussfeld, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, is at home. But good morning, Ira. How are you?
Good morning. I'm reporting from Woodstock, New York, and the greater Woodstock Metroplex. And I don't have a ruler out there, but I'm guessing about a foot and a half we got yesterday.
Wow.
And it's still coming down.
You should check in with Selma, another Woodstockian, and make sure she's okay also.
I'm guessing
otherwise
she
has to
more
go over
there. I think she lives up in the mountains.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Well, it's, it is, well,
I am.
Terry Gibson, I know, Terry, this is interesting. I know you teach at New Paltz. You also teach at RPI, but where your home base is where, Terry?
Well, I'm in an igloo, of course.
Yes, you're in.
And, yeah, and I'm in an igloo that overlooks the beautiful Hudson River in Highland, New York.
So that's where we're based.
Yes. Yeah.
So we're scattered all over. Well, Terry Gibson, it's been a little while since you've been on the program. I'm so happy you're here, lecturer and adjunct professor in communications for SUNY New Paltz and RPI, and we are thrilled to have you here. Last but certainly not least, Linda Ellerbe is in not all that far from Allen.
Greater North Egremont.
Yes, greater downtown Egremont.
One of the Egremonts.
Greater North Egremont. We're not even in downtown Egremont. That's in South Egremont.
And just so anyone,
I can report that Luna, my scaredy cat dog, whom you all have heard bark many a time, when we went out this morning, it was about 6:45, before 7. It was pretty dark out there. And she leapt off the front porch and to the snow and disappeared.
Absolutely.
I can report that here on the side of the hill where we live, the snow is about a luna and a half deep.
One and a half lunas deep. Which,
you know,
Joe, having met Luna,
talking,
I will say,
when you were talking about the early days of radio and how this was done, I started thinking about the early days of live TV, especially not live TV in the studio, but when we first had the remote trucks that were going to allow us to go live from anywhere. Yes and no. I remember one story. This was in New York in the early 70s, this very new to this technology. And the way we would go live is we would have a truck pull up, and there were large cables attached to the cameras and the other end of the truck to get the signal back to the station or the network or whatever. There was, I recall, a demonstration outside the Israeli embassy, the Israeli consulate in New York City. There was a large demonstration. I was sent there by WCBS to do a live report. We get there with our cumbersome truck and our cables, and we haul it all out, and the broadcast is just about to come to us when the demonstration moves around the corner. Okay, fine. So we all, my crew, me, all of us, we grab the cables and we haul them around the corner, the unspooling cable. And then the demonstration moved across the street around the corner. So we followed with our trucks. And then the demonstration moved inside a building. And I can tell you that you could do many things with those cables, but get through a revolving door was not one of them. We never went on with that demonstration on the air.
Well, you know, it's we've come a long way with technology and
the whole world is zooming, and here we are talking about, gee, isn't it amazing we can talk on the radio from our houses?
No, that's true. That's true. But this is very nice. So we're all here. We're ready for you, hopefully. So just a couple of things. You know, I always hate when newscasters and weather people tell you, you know, I just think common sense will tell you that you really shouldn't go out. And I was listening to people all this morning, you know, say, oh, my God, you shouldn't go out on the roads. And of course, they're right. They're absolutely right. I'm just good for them if you can get out on the road. I mean, I can't even get out of the house, so good for you if you can get out on the road. But really, I don't think anybody should be moving, because there's just I've never seen this much snow, and it really is something. Obviously, your condition may vary, but through all of that, we will continue and do our broadcast, and hopefully, we will have the same results that we've had over the last several minutes. Let me remind you, Joe, the dogs are out in our back porch, and Kelly is with them, and I'm hoping that they I'm not worried about the older dog, but the Tully, the puppy, who's 7 months old, this is his first real big snowstorm, and I do expect we'll probably hear him at some point this morning. But In the meantime, let us get started. A reminder to the listeners, even though we are remote, we certainly would love to hear from you. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org, and we'd love to hear from you as we start. You can talk to us about snow. That's fine. We're going to move on to some other stuff, but if you want to give us some reports as to how things are in your area, we would love to hear that as well. All right, let us begin and start in and talk about the stimulus and where we are on that. It seems like I've said this statement many, many times over the last, I don't know, several weeks slash months, that congressional leaders are very close to nearing a relief package and then something goes wrong. Well,
doesn't happen.
Once again, I say congressional leaders are now adding stimulus checks to the $900 billion relief package as they near a deal. This from the Washington Post. New direct payments will likely be included, but leaders are scrapping aid to states and cities as well as liability protections for companies as they try to finish negotiations. Congressional leaders said Wednesday they are nearing agreement on the economic relief package that would include a second round of stimulus checks. They're saying by the end of the week, we shall see. The package emerging is expected to include hundreds of billions of dollars in aid for ailing small businesses, as well as jobless Americans. Tens of billions of dollars in aid for other critical needs, such as vaccine distribution and schools. And a one-time check of between $600 and $700 for millions of Americans below a certain income threshold. The relief bill is likely to be coupled with several other major legislative efforts, from legislation to fund federal agencies to a bipartisan effort to rein in surprise medical billing that lawmakers could then pass into law in a matter of days. Alan, what do you think about this one?
Well, first of all, I think you're right on the money, Joe. We keep hearing it's going to happen any second, and then something happens. Mitch McConnell, of course, is to blame for this because he insists that he have his whole conference voting for it. And that may not happen because he's got a couple of stinkers in there who do not want, this kind of relief for people whose kids may starve or who got to have to get some food on the table or whatever. But if he combined his people that want it with the people with the Democrats in the Senate, he'd be there. It would happen. So we keep hearing it's almost done until it isn't done. And that is particularly disgraceful considering the amount of need that is out there. Then the other thing you have to keep your eye on, of course, and we know this, is Georgia. McConnell has been reported to be very concerned about losing the Senate because those two Republicans in Georgia will lose their election. And he thinks that this may be the straw that breaks the camel's back. So he wants a deal so that his people can win and so that he can remain the majority leader. It's pretty simple.
Terry Gibson.
Well, it's disappointing that it doesn't seem as if the aid to localities is going to be included. I know it's certainly in New York State's case. That's devastating news because we're looking at a $59 billion revenue shortfall and we're looking at a $15 billion budget and budget deficit. The local counties, towns, cities across this state and across others are in desperate need of help, and just the fact that these congressional leaders are not capable of figuring out how to do that, to me, is just very disappointing. And it just points to the fact of how difficult things moving forward are going to be, I think, if the Democrats cannot manage to win the Senate. You just look at how difficult it is right now to get things done with a Republican president. Imagine how difficult it might be to get things done with a Democratic president and a Republican Senate.
Wendell Arby.
Well, that depressed me. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Yes. Sorry. I'm leaving now. I'm going out to play in the snow with Luna and just ignore the world for today. No, it is what you say about the local governments being shut out of this. State and local relief funding appears to be going away. And the reason appears to be simply because lawmakers can't reach a compromise on how to protect corporations from liability in this crisis. I have had it up to here with protecting corporations in this country. We have seen very many big companies this year touting their success as leaders and putting Americans out of work at the same time while they increase the wealth to their shareholders and their executives. And you could just say the name Mitch McConnell right here, helping them along, because Mitch McConnell's allegiance is to power and nothing else.
Mm. Let's go to Ira Fussfeld and your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think the others have sort of hit on most of the themes that I had. I would be as skeptical as Alan about whether or not this is going to get done, but I don't have any doubts that this one is going to get done because they have no choice, but for different reasons. I think, as Alan points out, the Georgia issue is paramount in McConnell's mind. And what is interesting, I think it was David Axelrod of CNN pointed out that the motivation that McConnell has is the Georgia election as opposed to helping people who need the help. But at the same time, I think that the Democrats have blinked because they need to do something, and they believe something is better than nothing at this point. And I think also they are, in fact, gambling that they will, in fact, win Georgia and that they will, in fact, take over the Senate and control all three branches, and then they go back in and finish the job. But, it's a lot of money that they're talking about, but it's not nearly enough in my mind to satisfy the dire straits that so many people in this country are finding themselves.
You know, Ira, just let me ask you a question.
Just about a minute, Alan. Go ahead.
It seems to me that the Democrats know, the Republicans know, that they've got Republican governors who need this money, right? And so
sure. The hypocrisy and the cross-thinking is it's like watching a guy on Times Square moving the shells around. It's hard to figure out where the hell they are. but, yes, and on the face of it, it makes no sense. They're fighting against themselves.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue with our tremendous panel, Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Linda Ellerbe, and Terry Gibson. We do welcome you to join in on the fun. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We'll get to your letters, and we'll move on to other subjects as well. But first, we'll take a news break from the BBC and return right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 34 minutes past 9 o'clock. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Ira Fussfeld, and Linda Ellerbe all making up the panel this morning. We welcome your letters, panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We do have a few. We'll get to those in just a moment. I had to cut you off there. Ira, is there anything else you wanted to say?
No, I'm set for the next hour and a half. Check back with me later. No.
Okay. Alan, did you want to respond to that?
Relative to the weather, that people ask me about being on the program, and I say I really enjoy being on the program, but I miss being in the studio. And this morning I did not miss being in the studio. I'm very happy to stay inside today.
Yeah, it's a good day to stay inside for all involved. We have some letters about what we've been talking about, so we'll get to a couple of those. Please chime in, panel, if you desire. Rick says, seems to me that if McConnell was going to let a stimulus bill through the Senate, he should have done it before the election. Methinks he hoisted Trump and himself on his own petard. Alan.
Well, Trump did lose the election. And McConnell is the latest, I hate to say victim because he's hardly a victim, but, you know, you got Barr, or as they say in the restaurant, you want your water now. You know, you got your Barr, we used to, you are a lot around here. You've got your McConnell. And, of course, this maniac of a president, of course, turns on the people who have been loyal to him up until now, and he does it viciously. So, it's just astounding that that they played it along this long. But, you know, you, when you got a guy like this, you really cannot think you can pacify him, because you can't.
Linda, what do you think this means for McConnell? We were talking yesterday with Rosemary and the group about Bob and Chris, about, you know, what did he play this right? Did he play this wrong? Of what the idea was of holding out so long before not only working on a stimulus, but even recognizing Joe Biden as the president-elect?
I guess the answer, to be perfectly pragmatic, is if they win Georgia, he played it right. If they don't, he played it wrong.
Mm. To be determined. Yeah. And I assume you would agree with that, Terry?
Yeah, I think the outcome of the Georgia race is a pretty good measure of how successful these decisions were. But I think either way, it's clear to me at least that regardless of what individual Republicans say or do, the moment to somehow be able to rein in Donald Trump or to somehow put him in a place that they can control, that moment is long past. And I just think for the foreseeable future, Donald Trump is going to remain the superstar of the Republican Party, and everything is going to revolve around him, whether they like it or not. I really think that that's going to be a challenge. And it's going to be interesting to see how Trump maneuvers to keep the spotlight on him even when he's out of the White House.
You know, there was an interesting discussion, Joe and Terry, on the Media Project, as we did this morning, which is, of course, CNN has made out, as so much of the media, as like bandits for covering Trump. Their numbers are high, all of the rest. Trump goes away. Will they continue to cover him? Will they continue to say, okay, since he's established a presidency outside of the presidency, will they give him the attention that many people think he doesn't deserve? That's an interesting point.
Well, I think they will do it as long as he gives them a show to cover. You know, he's going to try to keep putting on the show he's put on for the last 4 years. It's going to be a little more challenging. But I think as long as he does something that's bright and shiny and spectacular and causes lots of chaos, that they'll have no choice but to cover him.
And we do know that he's
not
good at
that. The president.
Go ahead.
And when you say, well, it depends on what he does, he's not going to be able to do anything because he's no longer going to have any power. He's going to spout. We know that. He's going to call people names on Twitter. We know that. And he will attempt to continue to herd the base so that he can do with it whatever he wants going forward and at the very least be a kingmaker. But on the one, I didn't hear, obviously, the discussion on the Media Project. I wasn't on it this week, but we have discussed it in the past. And I think that my takeaway and my opinion has been we have to watch him. We've got to see what he says, and we got to see what he does. But we should not feel an obligation to report on everything he does because he's no longer the president. If what he is going to continue to do, which I think he will, is call people names, I don't know that the New York Times or CNN are obligated to cover that, to give him oxygen. Now, that doesn't mean he won't get plenty of oxygen from Fox and OAN and Newsmax and Rush Limbaugh, but it will be considerably less if the others don't cover him, the same that they're doing now.
Now, Ira, a question. There's a big difference, isn't there, between the New York Times and CNN? The New York Times does its thing. It does it well. CNN has really done incredibly well because of Trump, even though they've gone after Trump with everything they've got. So I would just suggest there's a difference.
Well, there's no doubt that there's a difference, and I would, as a print guy, say that the real journalism in the world is still being done primarily by the New York Times.
I agree.
But CNN certainly has boosted its ratings because of Trump, but because also it is viewed, I think, as more of an honest broker of news, and so much news is TV is where so many people get their news, maybe most of their news, that people other than the hardliners are looking not to MSNBC to find out what the left wants or the other three to find out what the right wants, but they feel like they're going to get a fair shake at CNN.
Linda?
I disagree. I disagree. Okay. I believe that CNN has done us no service. I also point out that the New York Times also has made money. Every media outlet has fallen prey to the Trump syndrome. And I don't know why any of us is surprised. The phrase, if it bleeds, it leads, has been around a very long time. The New York Times, CNN, 99% of all media outlets are for-profit outlets. You put the butts in the seats, you make money. Trump put the butts in the seats for CNN, for the New York Times, too, for whatever the print equivalent is. And my background is in both, so I can speak to both. This is not something I have any solution for. It is how news works. On the one hand, it never pays to ignore a tyrant, and therefore there is the obligation to cover the man. On the other hand, he was not president when the media was already covering him constantly.
But he kept on bringing in...
You're not going to stop that. It's not going to stop.
So why were they covering him, for whatever it's worth, Linda? Why were they covering
him? They covered him because he wrote a book. He didn't write it. Tony Schwartz wrote it. Apparently did not fact-check himself or his subject. He wrote a book called The Art of the Deal, which Tony Schwartz made a lot of money for, and then went around saying, well, you know, the part I didn't tell you was this and that and the other. Well, why didn't you put it in the book? He made a lot of money. His television show, Trump, the, quote, real estate mogul, Trump, the queen, the king of the beauty pageants. Come on. Donald Trump, people have known who Donald Trump is long before he was president of the United States. That's not going to go away. And the media is not going to stop covering him. Some of it is necessary. I agree. That is not how it's going to be parsed out or decided, whether or not it's necessary. It's going to be decided on the basis of, is he newsworthy, it, by definition of whatever you decide news is.
Terry Gibson, I want you to weigh in on this as well. Do you think some of his power goes when he leaves office on the 20th of January?
I mean, it's a different kind of power. He no longer has any legislative power. Not that he ever really used that anyway, unfortunately, but or fortunately, I guess, depending on how you look at it. But he does. Still, I think, have a lot of political power in terms of the leverage that he can use inside the Republican Party. I think even if the media isn't covering it, there are still, just Twitter alone with his 88 million followers and his devoted base gives him the ability to put pressure on Republican lawmakers and Republican wannabe lawmakers in ways that I think are going to be very problematic for the Republican Party and for the United States in general. I mean, you know, I don't know if you saw that video that he sent out just the other day, trying to get his base to call their congressional leaders and demand that they protest the election results on January 6th. I mean, these are the kind of gimmicks that he'll continue to do. And, you know, to Linda's point, she's right. He has been a darling of the media for as long as I can remember. I remember having discussions about Donald Trump back when I was in undergraduate school in the 80s and in graduate school in the early 90s. I mean, he's always been around. And so there's no real reason to believe that whatever it is that gives him the ability to captivate the media, that that's going to go away. I think it's going to stay there.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Ira Fussfeld, and Linda Ellerbe. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday morning. 46 minutes past 9 o'clock on the 17th of December, and it's a snowy day, and here we are. And we hope you are safe and sound and listening to us, hopefully under a really, like, comfy blanket. Let's see. We have letters. Let's go to Robert, who says, I'm wondering if President-elect Biden's administration is going to reinstate the tax withholding for Social Security. We need it. Anybody on that? Hearing nobody, I move on. Quinn says, oh boy, $700. Not even enough to pay my rent. Do the members of Congress have the slightest idea how much it costs the average American to survive every month? Asks Quinn.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that comment. I think this $600-$700 number they're throwing out there being half the amount they sent out previously is, it's kind of pathetic, really. I mean, it's really almost a slap in the face. I mean, look, everybody's happy to get what they can get, but is it really going to be enough to really help those who really need it? No, it's not. And it's just kind of pathetic, I think.
Ira?
Well, it's hard to argue with that. You're talking about McConnell and trying to get into his head. People who I read and listen to, who know much, much more about this than I do, begrudgingly praise McConnell for being good at what he does in the role that he plays. And that, of course, infuriates most of us who don't like his politics or like him personally. But he has calculated this game, and he is, I believe, going to come out of this negotiation a lot closer to where he started from and where he want to be. And I hate to hesitate to say I give him credit, but I just think he did what he thought he had to do for whatever reason he thought he had to do it, and he prevailed largely. So sure, that $600, I can't defend that. I don't know why that's a magic number. And I don't know who it's going to help, because that $600 is going to disappear awfully quickly. But as Terry said, it's something.
Right. And 2 days ago, it was nothing. So
right.
There is that. We go to Barbara's letter.
And by the way, yeah. Joe, it's still nothing.
Not
well, right. Absolutely. But it wasn't even going to be included. And now it will be. But now it might be.
Yeah. Now it might be. Because
and now the local governments get. Yeah. You know, they were going to get something and now will not. So Barbara writes to us. This is on Mitch McConnell, and picking up on what Ira just said. Just a few words about the sinister and evil to the core Mitch McConnell. We all know he is a political strategist who cares only about power and winning, and whose every move is with the long game in mind. His carefully constructed sentences and stodgy delivery of them read like simple facts, but his choice of words is very telling and manipulative. When he denied Merrick Garland even a hearing for the Supreme Court, he stated repeatedly that the American people should choose the next justice. No mention of the American people when he finally acknowledged Joe Biden as president-elect, only that the Electoral College had decided. Call me cynical, but he's laying the groundwork for the next presidential election. Trump, question mark, when the dishonorable Republican Party attempts once again to steal the election through the electoral process, and maybe they'll succeed next time now that they've been able to normalize the process of not conceding and throwing everything to the courts that they have packed with conservative justices. We do need to fix this.
By the way, it's a good letter. By the way, Joe, now that you've mentioned Merrick Garland, he's being considered, apparently, one of the two top choices for Attorney General.
Yeah.
Which is a way of...
Who's the other?
It's, what's his name, who just lost in what West Virginia, right?
Oh, Doug Jones. So Alan, rule out Deval Patrick and Andrew Cuomo?
Well, I don't rule out Andrew Cuomo. I think a lot depends on what happens, you know, in Georgia. Because if the Democrats win the Senate, then confirmation would be pretty easy. But I can only imagine the tough time that Cuomo is going to have if his nomination comes up before the Senate. I've talked to Cuomo about this a number of times. He denies vehemently that he has any interest in it. But, of course, you would until you get asked to go to the prom.
Right.
Terry? Joe, I just wanted to comment on the first part of that letter. I think it's a good letter, but the first part of the letter, which describes Mitch McConnell's tactics of using manipulation and being selective in his word choices, I mean, that type of description applies to any successful politician. There's never been a leader of the U.S. Senate that wasn't manipulative, and there's not going to be a successful one that doesn't do that. And Chuck Schumer is going to have to play that role too if he becomes the leader. The difference is what you do with that power. The difference is what you do with that skill set. And Mitch McConnell is... Go ahead.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but the way she differentiated it was she prefaced it by saying he uses that, and the words she used were sinister and evil to the core.
Yeah, well, I definitely agree with that. I definitely agree with that. So it's all about how you use those skills, and there's a way to do it that's in the greater good, for the greater good of the country. And I would certainly agree that he has not done that.
Linda?
He's despicable. What can I say? He is evil. He is good at being evil. He's smart, and he is despicable in the way he's used it. And I can't help but wonder as well if he possibly has made a mistake in holding back and not acknowledging that Joe Biden had won and finally say, well, yes, actually, Joe Biden did win. And now we can go forward from this. I believe that he may not be able to control some of Trump's base the way he thinks that he can say, okay, now we acknowledge it. We can go forward now. This is what I meant to do all along. Let Trump have his tantrum. Let the courts do what they can. And then let's announce the truth, which is that Joe Biden won the presidency of the United States. There are people out there who have been led along by Mitch and the others to believe it's not true, and who now suddenly can't spin quite as fast as Mr. McConnell can, and they still believe Joe is illegally president, and some of them, many of them own guns, and some of them are happy, ready to use them. And we get to lay this at Mitch McConnell's feet, too, not just Donald Trump's.
We got a letter from... Go ahead.
Well, yes, but Linda, as a political manipulator, what would he have gained by going earlier? By acknowledging earlier.
Oh, gosh, I guess right and wrong are irrelevant to this.
That's right. That's exactly
you
right.
You know, like morals, values, that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with this guy. Yeah, go ahead, Linda.
No, I mean, what would he have gained? Possibly nothing from the, as you all described, the manipulative job that he is in, and it is by definition indeed a manipulative job. I guess we're just to assume that the Republican Party at this point has nothing, does not care about the United States, is not going to care about the United States, has stopped caring about the United States, and we should not factor caring about the American people into any of the decisions being made by those currently calling themselves Republicans.
Let's go to
this. One day I'll try to say what I really think.
That's why we love you, Linda. Pete says, dear panel, the reluctance of the Republicans to offer effective relief is no mystery. Simply, they do not believe in government helping people. If they were to actually give what the country needs, it would defy that core principle, thereby showing the public how helpful government can be. So they hold back, then concede as little as possible. That
yeah,
from
but what
Pete.
They're really saying here is, we don't like the people who this money will go to, even though it will go to many of the base, the core of the Republican Party. This has always been about race, hasn't it? And it's always been.
Yes.
And it seems to me that that's what is really going on here. And that's why 72 million people voted for Trump, because that's his core message.
And it Nancy, ties directly to the cities, too. Here. I mean, the reason the cities are not being financed in this latest stimulus package is because the cities are Democratic strongholds. And we know that a lot of the cities are composed of large populations of African Americans. And so it is about race.
So, yes, exactly what you said. But so what are the cities going to do? I mean, what are they going to do? You have a pandemic, you have a vaccine program coming in, you have a very serious economic condition. What are the cities and let's just say many states going to do?
Yeah, and today on top of all of that, you have a giant snowstorm. You have to pay people to get out in the trucks with the shovels to clean the streets, to make it, you know, yeah, usable for the public. I mean, this cost an enormous amount of money just to remove the snow, and money that they currently do not have.
Yeah, but that's Joe's question is on the money. Really is. I mean, you know, Andrew Cuomo, what can he do? His two top Democrats in the state Senate and in the assembly want him to tax the rich. And he has tried to avoid that as the moderate that he is. And now it looks like he's going to have to go along with that. I don't think there's any other way to look at it. The other thing, Joe, that he's going to have to do is severely cut down on what people are, you know, what people expectations from government are going to be. And that's going to be very painful for some.
Did you want to say something else, Terry?
No, I mean, Alan's right. I mean, it's. I mean, I think every governor, including Andrew Cuomo, is being put in a position to try to figure out how to fund their budget, how to fund the basic needs of the state. And in places where you have access to a lot of wealth, and we're certainly in that category, you're going to have to tap into that. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to tax the wealthy, and it'll be interesting to see which method he chooses.
We go to this letter from Nancy, who says, thank you all for being there. Here's my two cents worth regarding the struggles of the corporations. Their CEOs and gleeful shareholders should be the ones required to bail them out. Keep the faith and right on, Linda, says Nancy. We then go just a minute before we have to go over to the news. Robert says, I'm wondering if President-elect Biden's administration is going to reinstate the tax withholding for Social Security. We need it. Did I read that one already? Maybe I just read it to myself. I don't remember. Okay, I did read it. Okay, thank you, Linda.
Like it anyway.
Okay, yeah, I thought I had read. So this is one I haven't read. This is from Dusty. I do believe if Congress and Senate members had their salaries cut back or completely lost, like a lot of us, there wouldn't have been a package. There would have been a package month ago. There are no consequences for their activity. And upon reading that, I may have read that one too. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, I'm gonna reset my computer, get rid of the old ones, put in the new ones, and we'll get started. We're gonna take a news break. Here with the latest, get a weather forecast and all of that. When we come back, we will continue with our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Ira Fussfeld, Linda Ellerbe, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Just during the break, I went outside. We're doing the show from home today because we all got snowed in. And normally we'd be in, but we're not today. So I just walked outside. Now, I am, for those of you who don't know, I am 6 foot six. And half of me was under in snow. I thank you, Ira. Thank you very much.
So the snow is half a Joe deep.
That's right. It's half a Joe deep. Exactly, Linda. Thank you. Man, it is. We haven't seen a car. As I've been doing the show, I've just been watching. I haven't seen a car go by, just nothing. And it's a lot of snow. So I hope everyone is being careful. I imagine our listeners right now are just they have a cup of coffee or hot chocolate or something good, tea. Oh, good tea, like really good tea. And just under a blanket and listening to us and enjoying what winter is offering at this particular moment. And hopefully, if you're all ticked off at the stuff we're talking about, you're writing us letters too. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Ira Fussfeld is the man's name, and Linda Ellerbe. We go to some letters, and then we're going to move on to other subjects. I'm insulted by Joe's comment about $600 being more than we had yesterday. How many times must the Democrats bend over and say, do it again? The $600 aid is a piddling amount when compared to what Trump's favorite corporations got by misappropriating funds from pandemic relief programs. It is time to draw a line in the sand with Republicans, prosecute those who stole pandemic relief money from Americans, and use the proceeds to distribute relief to those in need. Well, let me just counter with, I was saying nothing about the amount. What I was saying is yesterday when we talked about us being very near a deal or Congress being very near a deal, there was no stimulus money as a part of that agreement. That is what I meant. There was no money for people. There would be no checks. And that is what I meant. So I'm not talking about the amount.
By the way, yes. Joe, I agree with you, and I want you to know that. You know, it's easy enough for one of our liberal and sometimes middle-class friends to write about what some people don't have, you know, about $600 being nothing. I'm not suggesting it shouldn't be a lot more. It should. But, hey, you know, right now people are facing literally starvation for their families. Got to do something.
Right. But again, and my point, though, was, and not even a point, it was a fact, that yesterday when we talked about this, there was no talk of any check going out to anybody of any amount. So that got replaced yesterday, and they're now talking about money going out to people, and it's $600. So that was the point.
And as I understand it, there's a means test. So in other words, not everybody gets that $600, which is certainly the right way to go.
You have to hit a threshold. We go to anybody else on that? I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I've done a fair number of negotiations in my time, usually labor negotiations, but also with vendors and the like. And there, you know, there reaches a point in time in negotiations when you say, okay, this is it. Whether you're going to have to give in a little bit more than you'd like, or the other side is going to have to give in a little bit more, and I think nobody disagrees with the point that 600 is not a lot of money, but we're not in that negotiating room. We're not looking at them in the eye, and knowing that this is the best we're going to get out of these people at this point in time. Let's get it and live to fight another day. So I don't think anybody can be happy with the $600, at least on the non-McConnell side. But let's take it and keep moving on.
So, and then there's still, we started this conversation, not to relitigate this, but we started this conversation by saying this is the umpteenth time in the last, since what, July, that we've been talking about various negotiations going on to get some sort of stimulus package out. And we haven't gotten anywhere. So, you know, once again, they're telling us that they are close. And we have, the point being, we have heard that over the last half of a year and nothing has happened. And yes, talks have resumed. That's good. And we'll see what happens. But you never know, because we were supposed to be within hours right before Election Day. And that never happened.
And one other thing, Joe, Biden is coming. So in other words, got to get through another month. And then different things can happen. Of course, a lot will depend on what's going on in the United States Senate. And by the way, they're already beginning to say it's outrageous, the Republicans, that we're spending this much money, or we're bankrupting the American people. And wait a second now, you're the guys who did all of this.
Let's go to a couple other letters here, and then a few other letters, and then we'll go to new topics. Dobbs says snow plowers are paid by local governments. Hey, that's socialism. Maybe the Proud Boys were doing for free. Thank you, Dobbs. We also got this one from Michael. May I point out that 3 years ago, Paul Ryan and the Republicans handed the corporations and the billionaires a huge bailout with the infamous tax cut for capitalism, job growth, et cetera, et cetera. Now, 3 years later, these corporations don't have a slush fund to weather a 10-month slump. That worked out well. Now the national debt has ballooned and $600 is supposed to help the common man. Let's put to rest the myth that Republicans have/are good financial planners. They never have been. They never will be. That from Michael. Susan writes, 2 days ago, stimulus was not considered, and then Bernie and the senator from Missouri continued pushing it. I thought it might jeopardize the whole deal, but now look. I just want to add that all industrialized nations in the world are giving economic aid to workers during this once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. So glad Biden and company will start to turn things around. Economic justice, fairness, etc. So many Americans with that hat in their hand saying we don't deserve this help, or so it seems. Tom writes, if Trump's history since the 80s has shown us anything, it's that, yes, the media has given his playboy rich guy, ruthless business mogul lifestyle a lot of attention. But the entire time, he's reveled in it, no matter how childishly he complains about it. He craves attention, and even if the media coverage isn't favorable, you just know that he's enjoyed it in his own evil little way.
Good point.
Janice says,
and
I have read.
If I can add something to that.
Please.
I never have a problem with media bashing, because as a
as a recovering journalist myself, nobody, as Alan and everybody else will attest, nobody does it quite as well as we do. We know him. We know a lot. However, I have to remind everybody here, when they start to bash the media for covering Trump, is your complicity in it. All of us, we are viewers as well. We are the listeners. We liked watching Trump. I have said this over and over again, and it remains true. If everybody in the United States wanted to watch Shakespeare every night, that's what the networks would be giving you. The equation is very simple. You get what you want. We wanted Trump, and we as a nation have to look to our appetite for that kind of news and address that, as well as we in the media have to address our clear addiction to this kind of news for profit.
Well, and I know this is getting to be cliche saying this again, but 73 million people wanted it again this time, right? I mean, this is just going back a month ago. 6 weeks, but who's counting? Let's go to Lyle, who says, why doesn't the state of New York and the federal government issue COVID bonds to help fund the war, quote unquote, on this disease? Terry, any thoughts on that?
It's interesting concept. I mean, you can certainly argue that we are in a state of war right now and have been for quite some time. So, yeah, I haven't heard many people talk about that.
Let's go to Tim. $600 is an insult from an out-of-touch Congress. They are not impacted. They're getting paid to do nothing until it suits their personal agenda. Term limits, says Tim.
You know, I was thinking whether I should raise the issue of term limits myself, and whether that dynamic would help or hurt in terms of politicians looking over their shoulders and being afraid of their shadows because they're not going to get reelected. Who knows what the next election would bring if there would be term limits erasing today's bunch of nuts. It would not make me mad in concept to see five terms in Congress and three terms tops in the Senate to go along with the two terms of a president, and see what kind of dynamic that would mean in our government.
I think you're being very generous, Hiram. I say two terms in the Senate, and that's a lot.
I can live with that.
And I have to say that New York City has term limits, and it's working out quite well. It really is.
Yeah. Anybody else in term limits? Go ahead.
Joe, can I just go back to the bond letter? I was thinking on that just a little bit more.
Sure.
And the idea of issuing bonds as we did back during the wars, I think it's an interesting idea, but it would never happen because it would require that all of those deniers that we have in the Republican Party, especially in the Senate and the House, that they actually, you know, accept reality that there is a raging pandemic, that we are truly suffering at the local, county, and state level, and they would have to just accept reality. And back during the time that we issued bonds, there was a true acceptance of the fact that we were at war and we had to do something. And I think it would never happen because of that lack of just being able to live in the real world.
Terry, you're closer to this than I am, but wasn't there a lot of talk about an environmental bond in New York State that would be used to fight the kinds of excess that we're doing? And it was called back, of course, because of where we are right now. But bonds could have been used.
Yeah, I do remember that, and I don't know what happened to that movement.
I think what happened, it was a bad time. It turns out it's just a bad time.
You know, well, you need people in power that truly believe that it's government's responsibility to help its citizens. And if you have that, then something like a bond is doable. Without that, it's not.
Let's go to this letter from Janice. I've read that the vice president can take back leadership of the Senate from the majority leader, call on senators, bring up bills, etc. Could VP Harris do that? Alan?
No. not going to happen. I mean, you know, this is a president who took great delight in breaking norms. I doubt very much Vice President Harris. And we've said it before. I said it yesterday, I believe. The vice president is basically a symbolic figure up there. The majority leader is the person who has the votes, and anything that the vice president has says that they don't like, they'll vote down. Now, if in fact we come to a point now where both Democrats win in Georgia, you will have a situation in which power will be divided and the vice president's role will be huge coming in. So maybe that's what the reference was to. But right now, if the Republicans have more votes than the Democrats, it doesn't make any sense.
If it turns out to be 50-50, Harris will not only be the first female vice president, she will be the most powerful vice president in the history of the country, because she will cast the deciding vote in the Senate and on an everyday basis.
I believe, Ira, that it has happened once before. We talked about that the other day. And yes, she'll be very powerful.
Let's see. Thomas says, I hope the coverage of how the Trump administration failed the American people never ends. That's another way of looking at it. Josh says, do we know if they're discussing money for dependents as in the last round? I do not think we know that, correct? Does anyone else know about that?
I don't know.
I don't think that is the case. All right, let's take a break from talking about stimulus stuff. And before we have our bottom of the hour break, we'll go back and talk about what's happening with coronavirus, as well as the vaccine and where we are right now. Officials are stressing that this is, yes, there is talk of a vaccine, or there is all the talk about the vaccine because it is out there. It is being administered. We are finding out more about it. We'll get to that in a second. We apparently more doses per vial than we knew. So that's all good news. But meanwhile, with 244,365 new cases reported in a single day, the United States is entering new territory. This from the New York Times. Officials across the U.S. on Wednesday reported the highest daily number for new coronavirus since the pandemic began, as well as the most deaths in a single day, 3,607, nearly 500 more than the record set only a week ago. The previous case record, 236,800, was set last Friday, though a reporting anomaly in Texas made it appear still higher. The latest figures capped a day on which health experts warned Americans who are excited by the rollout of a vaccination campaign that it is far too soon to abandon common sense precautions for halting the spread of the virus. The first shots of a vaccine made by Pfizer and BioNTech were administered on Monday. Another vaccine made by Moderna is expected to receive emergency authorization from the Food and Drug Administration this week. Both highly effective in preventing coronavirus in clinical trials, but it will be months before a broad enough swath of the population can be vaccinated. Officials are also scrambling to combat skepticism about the vaccine. Quote, this from Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert. As wonderful as this is, because it's been an extraordinary manifestation of the fruits of science done in a very rapid way, it's also bittersweet. As the doses are distributed through the states and the virus continues to engulf the country, the death toll climbs. And more than any other country, the United States, just as the first injections of the vaccine were going into the arms of frontline healthcare workers, nearly 3,000 new deaths were reported on Tuesday. So this all is, as Dr. Fauci says, bittersweet. And what you don't want to happen, of course, is for people to get complacent, and even more so, perhaps, than they already are, allowing us to be in the situation that we're currently in. Alan.
Yeah, it's really terrible. Listen, I want my shot, and I want it as fast as I can possibly get it. And if we've talked about the authoritative allocation of scarce resources, there are an awful lot of people like me who want to know where to get it, how to get it, and when. New York State is announcing that certain hospitals have primacy. Here in Massachusetts, where I live, I want to know, and I think many people who are listening to this do too. And I have relatives who want to go out. They're just sick and tired of this whole thing, and they want to get out and go when this is at an all-time high. It's terrible. You know, nobody, if they can avoid it, should go out of their house. I have one relative who keeps saying, but you go to the supermarket. I say, I got to eat, but I'm not going helter-skelter into another place, that's for sure. And if I walk in there, I've got my mask on and I've got my shield on, and I'm scared to death anyway. So whatever that means.
So why don't you order online?
To whom do you order?
You can order your groceries.
At Big Y, that's where you live. You can order online and have pick it up curbside.
I get it. Okay.
I'm just pointing out you can. I'm not saying you should. Yeah. I'm pointing out you could.
No, yeah, I know. But, you know, I'm what we call a
But you know is what everybody says. I know I shouldn't go out, but those rules don't really apply to me. I have friends who say, oh, yeah, I'm quarantined. Oh, I do go to the gym, yeah. I go to Pilates. And, yeah, I'm getting together with my family Christmas.
You are so right.
It's been so long and so hard. I feel like I'm living that the real Groundhog Day effect of all of this is not that I get up and kind of do the same thing every day in quarantine. It's that every day we get told, if you do this, here's what will happen. If you go out, if you get infected, here's what will happen. If you have people over, here's what will happen. We are now at Christmas. We are seeing what happened for Thanksgiving. And yet very smart people are saying, you know, I'm just really tired of this. I'm just going to get together with just a few friends and family for Christmas, as though we didn't know what will happen. That is the groundhog effect that I'm getting really exhausted with.
You're right.
The highlight of my week, and it says more about me than it does about anybody else, the highlight of my week is when I make my weekly visit to Adams Fair Acre Farms and go shopping. And it's not only because I like to eat, but it gives me a chance to go out to go someplace and see what it's like in the outside world. That said, it's not particularly safe to go there either. But, I mean, it's not not casting aspersions at them. They're a great store, and I believe they're still underwriting on this station. But there's some things that you absolutely have to do. And I must confess that when the vaccine launched this week, I took a deep breath, hopefully with my mask on, saying, okay, we've turned the corner. But as has been pointed out before, we may have turned the corner, but there's still plenty of time to go. And nobody should feel this vaccine, as we stand right now, is going to end the pandemic. There's a lot more vaccinations to be given before that can happen.
Yep.
Well, and these numbers just keep growing, and it's so sad. And we know from, just as Linda said, the holiday with the next 2-3 weeks is going to be probably horrible, and we'll see the effects of that right up until the end of January, and probably far later than that, of course, but at least the worst of it. And it is interesting. It's a great point, because I do hear that a lot from people where they say, yes, I'm doing nothing. I am quarantining. I mean, I did go to my grandson's soccer game last night, and I'm like, oh, yeah. All right. Maybe.
Here's
everyone seems to say, yes, it's a great idea, but that doesn't mean me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or they don't see it. Yeah.
I'm special.
It's fledgling
pages
about people who get bad reactions from the vaccine. It was a debate last night and on one of the newsletters. Are we going to do this every time somebody has a bad reaction? And if so, is it going to scare people away from taking the vaccine?
Sure, and it will.
My favorite.
I don't know, Alan. I think more to the point is what you said when you said, I want to know when and where I can get it. The
Absolutely.
More this comes out, the more that it appears to be available, and I've said this before too, I think the fight is not going to be on who refuses to be vaccinated. The fight is going to be who gets to be vaccinated.
I agree.
People are going to want to be vaccinated. Last week, I think it was last week, I have no sense of time anymore, in the New York Times ran a piece about where do you stand in line for the vaccine for each state. Now, this is not as scientific as it should be, but it was kind of interesting. I punched in my information. It had four questions having to do with your work and your health and your age. I punched in mine and discovered that although I'm 76 with congestive heart failure, there are 23 million Americans ahead of me. There are more than 500,000 Americans ahead of me in Massachusetts and more than 10,000 Americans ahead of me in Berkshire County. So I'm not looking to think that this is going to be coming my way anytime soon.
That's depressing. Well, where did you find that survey? I'd like to get
it's exactly where I was.
Last week.
It's in the New York Times, and you can plug in the information, and it'll tell you where you are.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got to figure that
now,
out.
Granted,
that'll bum everybody.
Like I say, I'm not calling this a purely scientific thing, but what it comes down to is the whole issue of essential workers and what are defined as essential workers. Yeah, the person serving you drive-through at McDonald's is an essential worker. Yeah, your exterminator is an essential worker. And yeah, apparently these will come before the old and the elderly in the argument of do you stop the virus or do you stop the deaths, which is, I admit, a legitimate argument. Now, you know, in this world where you stand often depends on where you sit. Since I'm old with underlying conditions, I would hope to be closer up in the line, but I understand that I'm not going to be.
And then
all right.
What about the second dose?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then you got to go, and then where are you?
Figure the logistics of that.
Right. We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We are all snowbound, but we're here for you, and we will continue our broadcast. Alan Shartok, Terry Gibson, Ira Fussfeld, and Wendell Arby. We'll continue after this short break. Well, the sounds of the North Country this morning of snowblowers and shoveling and all of that good stuff. Of course, our award-winning news team will be on this throughout the day, and we'll be hearing much more during the newscast at the top of the hour. Well, actually, we have a special at the top of the hour, and then we'll be hearing Midday Magazine at noon today. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it's Candles Burning Brightly, the traditional Hanukkah special that we play and we have for many, many years that is hosted by Mindy Ratner. So we will be doing that, and that'll be coming up at 11 o'clock. Also, quick a shout out to Alan, who will be talking to the folks behind the Dolphin Studio and their beautiful calendar that's celebrating its 50th anniversary. And you'll be talking to them in just a few minutes as well, which is very cool.
Indeed. And that was fun. They're great people.
Yeah, good stuff. So we'll be doing all of that coming up. So last call on the letters, and with our wonderful panel, Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, Terry Gibson, and Linda Ellerby. All right, let's see. A couple letters. Chris, listening this morning, one of the narratives is if you go out at all, you're saying I'm special. I disagree. Aren't we trying to go out and take prudent risks with the practice of social distancing, masks, and hygiene? The I am special statement feels shaming, but also misguided.
I'm not talking about people who are going out in social distancing. I'm talking about people inviting other people into their houses over Christmas.
I have a different take on it, Linda. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think we should go out of our houses, because every time you walk out of the house, you have presented to the enemy, the virus, the chance to infect you. Right? You don't go out, you don't get infected. You do go out, whether it's with a mask on. We've all been warned about how it can crawl in over the sides, and when you take it off, don't touch it. Don't touch the mask if you've been out because somebody's stuff may be on your mask. No, don't go out. It's simple. And if you can keep that up for a couple of months now, until the vaccine is in everybody or gets in everybody, it's clear that you're much better off. Where have I gone wrong?
I agree, but that's not what I'm saying. Apparently, I'm not being clear. I'm talking specifically about what happened to Thanksgiving, and now we're seeing the deaths right. And the illnesses, and what's about to happen Christmas with people who say, oh, I'm special, so let's get together with the family. Okay, they're all from out of town, and we haven't been together. That's what I'm talking about. This mad rush into, gee, it's been a long time since I've seen my family. It's been more than a year since I've seen my children. and grandchildren, and it's probably going to be another year before I do. We got caught by distance in the pandemic. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to rush over to have people in my home for Christmas. Or that's my concern. It's not right. That do you go out and social distance. It's not any of those things. It's the idea that it's okay for me, because I miss my family, to get together Christmas, even though everybody is telling me it's not safe. Gee, I'm special. It's okay for me. That's what I'm talking about.
By the way, I wasn't reacting to you, to be fair. I was reacting to the letter. certainly not to you.
Yeah. All right, let's go to a couple other letters. Mary says, I'm a teacher, and I was surprised to see that teachers are not part of the first, second, or third wave for vaccinations. We're behind fire workers, police, and restaurant staff. I'm surprised because in the same breath the politicians say teachers aren't essential, they also say they want to get schools open. If you want to reopen schools, vaccinate the teachers.
Great letter.
Very interesting point from Mary.
Hear, hear.
Matt says, I heard a smart person say once, every snowflake in an avalanche pleads not guilty. So, says Matt, wear a mask. We go to Dina. In the seventh dose, is the seventh dose in the vial guaranteed a full dosage, or could it be three quarters of some other percentage thereof? So this is from the story I was alluding to earlier. So yesterday, the Washington Post reported that Pfizer, apparently, they've been the FDA is looking into the fact that you per vial, you were supposed to get five doses per vial. And now they're finding that it can be five, six, or seven. So the good news to that is that there's more of it than we expected. So you can get more out of a vial than people expected, which means more doses, which, of course, is good news because the more people we can get vaccinated, the better. But my reading, did anyone read this differently? Ira, did you see that is there a sense of a very defined amount, or did it vary from vial to vial?
Yeah, I think the latter, and I think this is just one of those things that has popped up right now, and they'll figure it out, they will determine whether it's supposed to be five, six, or seven, and it'll say so on the label. I mean, you know, the analogy is probably a poor one, but when you buy a bottle of pop, you expect to get 12 ounces in the bottle, and you probably do, but you know, the machine could be off and you get 11 and a half or 12 and a half. I think this is just a minor and not to be unexpected short-term issue that is bound to come up when you roll something out as quickly as this.
We'll have to ask Dr. Fagan about that, Joe.
Yes, we will. Absolutely. I do.
You mean you don't trust Dr. Fussfeld on this?
No. I do.
Well, let's try Dr. Fussfeld.
I have nothing but respect for you, Ira.
Well, you're right not to believe me on this.
Well, although the point is made also by Pat, who writes to us and says, unsettling, all in shouty caps. How can content quality be guaranteed if they can't control volume for vial? If it were a plain water or normal saline, you would not get a drop excess. What idiocy is this? But back to Ira's point, we don't know yet. We'll probably figure this out, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with people who are getting allergic reactions, and is there too much coverage of it when, so far, to my knowledge, there's only been three cases in this country among the thousands of vaccines that have been administered. You know, we'll figure it out.
I saw one news story. It was one of those, I don't know if it was clickbait or not, but it was as far as reactions to the shot. And it said, only in Alaska? Question marks, because I guess two of them have been in Alaska. And I thought, okay, I can't read this. Let's see.
So, Joe, Sarah Palin would say, I can see an allergic reaction from my house.
In Russia, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So Joe, have you,
yes.
Looking at a bottle of Diet Coke, I know you don't drink that stuff
anymore. I am. I've been off for a year and a week.
You are better than I am. Okay, and you take a look at it. Have you ever seen an extra ounce in a Diet Coke pot?
Well, that's it. And to Pat's point, too, right, you don't. And also, does that mean that they got some other calculation, you know, not correct. And without trying to stoke any fear, I don't know. I agree with Ira. They'll figure it out. It's only been, what, 4 days since it's been out and rolling?
Can they turn these things out in record amount of time?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the way that I...
On the other hand, to the person who said unsettling in all caps, I must say, as an old person who takes heart meds and a couple of other meds, I kind of like feeling that they're not telling me, well, it's close to the amount. It's somewhere around the dosage you should take. It's in the vicinity of. Yeah. We'll figure it out later.
Give it a shot. You're fine. I'm sorry.
Give it a shot.
Approximately 2 ounces.
And if the,
give it a
and
shot should be our new national motto. Take the
and
vaccine.
If there's a lot left over in the vial, one wonders. If there's a lot left over in the vial, one wonders and hopes that's because whoever is administering the stuff didn't do it the wrong way with a little left over.
By the way, before we close today, I want to give a shout out to Chemicals. And Better Life Through Chemistry. This has to do with Joe getting off the Diet Cokes and Alan not. And I have to associate with Alan when you were all talking about what a lovely day for cocoa. I was sitting here with a frosted Diet Coke in my hand. Now, granted, putting peppermint ice cream in a Diet Coke is sending a bit of a mixed message, but there you have it. Better living through chemistry.
Oh, now, I'm sorry. So you put peppermint ice cream in your Diet Coke?
I did today, yes. Frosted Cokes in Texas, where I grew up, were very popular.
That sounds good.
It is wonderful, Joe.
Good plan.
Oh, man. Yeah,
it has
little ice
crystals of peppermint in the thing. It's just marvelous. You put a couple of cubes in the glass, put your ice cream in, and pour the Coke over it, stir.
Put your ice cream in. Your, right.
Yeah, that's right. that's very, very good.
Peppermint ice cream in all forms.
Doesn't that defeat the whole purpose of drinking Diet Coke?
Well, it does, but this is a matter of how it tastes. I have
well, that purpose has been defeated
so
a long time
I don't
ago.
Like the taste of them anymore. But I don't drink but maybe one every 4 days or 5 days or a week. So
Me
I don't
too.
Have a problem with drinking Diet
I
Coke.
I agree with you.
Yeah. No, I had an issue, and then when I fell down the stairs and I was laid up and I couldn't move for a month and a half, while I was for a very brief period when I was on painkillers, I thought, well, now's the perfect time to get off of it because I won't have all the negative stuff that you normally have, the headaches and all that stuff, and so I did it, and then no problem. So,
well, I want to congratulate you. That took guts. It did.
Well. It feels good. It's better.
And I want you to know that you're not an addict, because we don't use that word anymore.
No, we don't. All right. We are just about out of time. I want to thank everybody for being with us. Just a couple programming notes. First of all, repeat what we said a moment ago, but in just a minute or two, Alan is going to be talking to the folks from the Dolphin Studio. They've been putting out this gorgeous calendar. They've been doing it for 50 years, and Alan will be talking to the two sisters who run the company, and that's a terrific interview, and we'll be hearing that. Then coming up at 11 o'clock, right at 11 o'clock, Minnie Ratner will be hosting the holiday favorite Candles Burning Brightly, and we'll be hearing that from 11 to 12. Again, I would also like to once again thank our incredible team of Rob Chacon and Sarah LaDuke and Stacey Rosenberry and Alan, everybody who made this possible today, and especially to Mike Bowen, who has been the voice in my ear and telling me when to talk and when to shut up, and I appreciate that. And, of course, thanks to Alan. I appreciate it. I'll be back in the studio tomorrow.
And we appreciate you, Joe, because you brought all of this to all of us.
Be great. We'll be back. And to Terry and Ira and Linda, thank you so much. We love talking to you. Be safe, and we'll talk to you on the other side. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
we'll
Joe.
Be back.
Stop snowing in Woodstock.
There you go. There's our Woodstock.
It's snowing, but lighter in greater North Egremont.
We're still snow here in Greenwich, but it looks like we're it's much brighter.
The Egremonts.
The Egremonts. Yeah.
The Egremonts.
Berkshire Egremonts. We will take a break, and when we come back, we'll have Alan talking to the folks from the Dolphin Studio next, right here on the Roundtable.